Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson and for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Donald Trump under new fire over his charitable foundation. A Washington Post investigation reveals he used more than $250,000 from the Donald J. Trump Foundation to pay his own legal fees. Trump has said he donated over $100 million to charity, but he's never provided any proof. That's becoming a big problem. Now the New York Attorney General is on the case. This hour on Point, following the Trump Foundation money trail. You can join us on air or online. What do you make of revelations about the Trump Foundation, of Trump's refusal to open his books? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Later in this hour, what Trump surrogate Chris Christie knew about the September 2013 lane closures at the George Washington Bridge. But first, joining me from Washington is David Farenthold, reporter for The Washington Post. He's been closely investigating the Trump Foundation and Trump's charitable giving. David Farenthold, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Oh, thank you.
So before we start, I should mention that we did an hour on the Clinton Foundation last month, and you can listen to that program on our website or download it as a podcast. So, David, you've been investigating Trump's charitable foundation and the charities he's donated to. When and why did you decide to start digging in?
This actually began back in January. If you remember, Trump skipped a Fox News debate and said he was going to have a fundraiser for veterans in Iowa. He got a lot of positive TV coverage out of that. And he said at the time that he raised $6 million. Well, we started digging into that a few weeks later when it seemed like he had not actually given away most of that $6 million that he said he'd raised, including $1 million that he said he had given personally. And that digging led us to find out that, A, Trump had not given away the $1 million personally to veterans that he said he would, and, B, that a lot of the money that other people had given him to give away to the veterans had sort of gone into this black hole, which was the Donald J. Trump Foundation. I'd never really heard of that before, but then we found this odd charity that Trump had set up. We realized that a lot of the money that had been entrusted to Trump to give away was still sitting in that foundation, and it took him 4 months to actually, and a lot of media pressure to actually cough it up and give it away to the people he said he'd give it away to. So that got us interested in the Trump Foundation in general. How was he using it before when he was not under media scrutiny?
So there's a lot here, obviously, in your many months of investigating. Your latest revelation, you just published a story in the Washington Post about Donald Trump spending more than $250,000 from his charitable foundation to settle lawsuits that involved his for-profit businesses. What did you find?
We found a couple of cases, one from 2007 and one from 2011, in which Trump's businesses, in one case his club Mar-a-Lago down in Palm Beach on the ocean, the other case a golf course in New York State that he owns, both those businesses had gotten into legal trouble. In Florida, the club had been fined by the town of Palm Beach $120,000 for building a giant American flag on a flagpole that was too tall for the town ordinances. So that club owed $120,000 to the town. In New York, Trump's golf club, basically a guy had won, hit a hole-in-one at a tournament at the club where he was told if you hit a hole-in-one, you win $1 million. So he wins $1 million. He's extremely excited for a couple of hours. And then they pull him out of the clubhouse in the middle of the party and tell him you actually win nothing because the prize required that the hole be 150 yards long. And because of the way Trump's people set up his course, the hole was too short. He sues Trump for $1 million. So we have these two cases of legal trouble where the Trump's businesses may owe money to somebody else. And in both cases, Trump settles those legal disputes involving his businesses by having the businesses promise to give money to charity. So in the case of Mar-a-Lago, the town agrees to waive the $120,000 worth of fines if Mar-a-Lago makes a $100,000 donation to a specific veterans charity. In the New York case, the lawsuit settles and Trump's golf club agrees to make a donation to the charity of the guy who hit the hole in one. But in both cases, Trump's businesses did not make those payments that they had agreed to. Instead, Trump used his charity, the Donald J. Trump Foundation, to make those payments that his businesses had already agreed to. So he's basically using his charity to save his businesses $250,000+.
So was he squeezing through a loophole? Was this illegal?
It is – well, I'll tell you what the law says. The law says that if you run a private foundation like the Trump Foundation, you cannot take the money out of that foundation and use it to benefit yourself. You can't use it to buy things for yourself, and you can't use it to benefit your businesses. That's illegal. It's called self-dealing. And the people that I talked to yesterday, tax experts, said that these two cases, Trump using the money out of his foundation to basically pay the bills of his businesses, that that was one of the most blatant classic cases of self-dealing they had ever seen.
So here's CNN last night. Trump campaign manager Kellyanne Conway responding, David, to your investigation in the Washington Post, where you say there is evidence of self-dealing.
How did his golf course benefit from him redirecting monies that mistakenly came to the Trump Foundation? He redirected them to someone else's private foundation based on a hole-in-one contest. They were misdirected to his foundation. I'm told by his accountants and attorneys they went to the right foundation after that. How in the world did his business benefit from that? How did Mar-a-Lago benefit from him giving $100,000 to veterans?
So they're saying that the money was redirected, that this was a mistake?
Well, I should note, first of all, that I've asked them a number of times, the Trump campaign, about this hole-in-one contest, and I've never gotten even the smallest amount of response. So if there is an explanation, I've asked for it and never heard it. But I'll tell you what you can see in the tax records. The public tax records and court records as well. Court records show, in that case, Trump's golf course signing off on a settlement in which they say, we, along with the charity that actually was overseeing the tournament, we, the golf course, will make a donation to a charity of the hole-in-one golfer's choosing. And then later on, that golfer's charity shows a donation from the Donald J. Trump Foundation. So after the golf course agrees, signs on the dotted line to make a charitable donation, the Donald J. Trump Foundation makes a donation. So if there's money that was redirected, they've never explained that. And what you can see in tax records is money came out of the Trump Foundation to this guy that the Trump golf course was settling a lawsuit with.
So you've reported that Donald Trump has put very little of his own money into his charitable foundation. Tell us why that is unusual for family foundations.
Family foundations, and the sort of legal category is called a private foundation. These are things that wealthy people set up. Basically, they don't employ a lot of people. They don't do charitable work on their own. They're kind of like a bank account that the rich person puts money in and then they give money out to charities. A lot of people have those. Trump's is rather unusually small for a person of his wealth. For instance, Oprah Winfrey has a lot less money than Trump does on paper, and she has a charitable foundation that has like $300 million in it. Trump's has $1.3 million at last count. But it's even more unusual for somebody who to name a private foundation after themselves and then not put any of their own money into it. As you said, Trump has not put any money into his own foundation, as far as we can tell, since 2008.
So even though that money is small in the foundation, where does most of it come from then?
It all comes from other donors. The biggest source is Vince McMahon, the guy who is the pro wrestling executive. Uh-huh. He and his wife gave a total of $5 million to the Trump Foundation between 2007 and 2009. There's also a big donor in New York City named Richard Ebers, who's a ticket broker, like a sort of high-end scalper. If you need tickets to a big event in New York, he can get them for you. Every year he gives Trump between $400,000 and $600,000 in very odd increments. Both McMahon and Richard Ebers have not wanted to comment about why they give money to the Trump Foundation.
So explain what happened to this point with the Palm Beach Police Foundation.
This is a really interesting case. The Palm Beach Police Foundation is a charity in Palm Beach where Trump has his Mar-a-Lago Club. And the Mar-a-Lago Club, a huge part of its business is renting itself out for huge charity galas. That's a lot of the social life in Palm Beach, and Mar-a-Lago makes a lot of money off these. It makes a particular lot of money off the Palm Beach Policeman's Ball, which the Policeman's Foundation puts on. That police foundation pays Trump as much as $270,000 per night to rent – for one night to rent this club. It's a very important client of his. So in 2009, Trump decides that he wants to give a donation to the Palm Beach Police Foundation. It's a very important customer of his. He doesn't use his own money out of his own pocket. He doesn't even use money out of his foundation. Instead, he goes to another foundation. This one established by a friend of his who's now dead, Charles Evans, a Hollywood producer. He goes to the trustees of the Charles Evans Foundation and he says, listen, I'm raising money for the Palm Beach Police Foundation. I need you to, you know, can you give me some? But don't, if you're going to give it to the police foundation, don't give it straight to them. Give it to me and then I'll hand it to them. They give him $150,000 to the Donald Trump Foundation. All Trump does is take the $150,000 that came from that other group, pass it on to the police foundation, adding nothing of his own. He turns their donation into his $150,000 donation without adding anything from his own pocket or his own foundation. Then Trump not only gets to keep the business, it's very lucrative for him, but he also gets a giant crystal palm tree, the Palm Tree Award, where he's honored at this gala for his selfless philanthropy. And it didn't didn't require any money of his own.
So how did the Charles Evans Foundation feel about that?
When they figured it out, they decided that they would just send their money to directly to the Palm Beach Police Foundation, which they did. They stopped giving to Trump and they started giving straight to the Palm Beach Police Foundation, and now they get the accolades.
Here's an interview with ABC in June where Donald Trump talks about giving his own money away to charitable foundations anonymously.
Over a period of years, I've given over $100 million to charity.
Is there any proof of this claim of $100 million to charity?
It's a really interesting claim, yes. I'll tell you what we know about that. Last year, the Trump campaign put out what they said was a list of $102 million of charitable donations by Trump over the last 5 years. And I have to assume that's what Trump is talking about there. So it's a 92-page list, and all there was on the list was dates, recipients, and dollar amounts. And there was nothing else about these gifts. And we dug into that earlier this year and discovered that almost all of those gifts were free rounds of golf given away by Trump's golf courses to local charities. They'd give away a free foursome at the Trump golf course in Los Angeles for a local charity's auction. And then he would impute a dollar amount. In some cases, he'd impute a dollar amount of like $2,500 per foursome and count that as his own donation. So when we figured that out, we went back to the Trump people and said, okay, we think a lot of this is just free rounds of golf. There's some land conservation easements on properties Trump owns where he agrees not to develop the land and then imputes a value to his loss because he can't develop it. But we said, I can't see anywhere on here that actually seems to be a cash gift out of Donald Trump's own pocket. The kind of thing when you think of charitable donations, you think of a rich guy giving his own money to a charity. I said, I can't find that in this 92-page list. And they said, oh, it's not there. In this 92-page list of $102 million, not $1 was actual a cash gift out of Donald Trump's own pocket to a charity. Mm. And their explanation at the time was, oh, well, there's other gifts, secret gifts. We can't tell you how many, but he really does give his own money to charity. But we've never heard more than that.
Got to go to break here, David. We'll get much more on the other side. But did you find anything with Trump's name on it, named after him because of some sort of charitable donation?
I found a grand total of three things, and all of them together could fit in the back of a U-Haul. There's two seats, like an individual seat named after him at a theater in New Jersey, one in Florida, and a park bench in New York.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashberg, we're talking with Washington Post reporter David Farenthold this hour about his investigation into Donald Trump's charitable giving and the fact that Donald Trump used money from his charity to pay his own legal fees. You can join the conversation. Does Donald Trump owe the American public an explanation? Does this sound like presidential conduct to you? Is it his personal business? Here's an interview with CNN last week where Trump's campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway, said the candidate has been generous with his money and his charitable foundation's money.
Donald Trump has been incredibly generous over the course of his life.
With his own money.
With his own money and his foundation's money, which is his money.
And then later in the same interview, CNN's Allison Camerota questioned Conway again about Trump's yet-to-be-released tax returns. Conway got defensive.
Has Donald Trump or will he release anything from the IRS, a letter from the IRS proving that he's under audit?
I'm sorry?
Will Donald Trump release anything from the IRS proving that he's under audit?
I don't know. Why? In other words, why are you calling him a liar?
Well, we're taking his word for it.
Are you calling him a liar?
So we'll get to some of those tax returns in a minute. You've told us, David, about money from the Trump Foundation that's going to pay off obligations that Trump's businesses have taken on, among other things. Let's talk about Pam Bondi for a minute. Donald Trump has dismissed questions about a donation that his foundation made to the Florida Attorney General, Pam Bondi, to her reelection campaign in 2013. This was at the time when Bondi was considering a fraud investigation into Trump University. Tell us what your reporting has revealed about that.
As you said, around that time, as Pam Bondi's office is trying to decide whether they're going to look into allegations of fraud that people in Florida had made against Trump University, Bondi solicits a donation from Trump, a political donation. We don't know exactly when that happened, when she actually made that ask, but he says yes. And then he pays the donation out of the Donald J. Trump Foundation, which is against the law. You can't use a nonprofit foundation to give money to political groups. So he did that, and then eventually the Pam Bondi's office decided they did not want to investigate the case. They and Trump have both said, oh, the money had nothing to do with it. But the interesting thing from a look at Trump's charity is that there was sort of an afterlife to this and a second error that kind of compounded the first. So Trump's foundation gives money when it should not to a political group. But then when it comes time for them to file their annual tax filings, the Trump Foundation, they they did something that had the effect of covering that up from the IRS. They didn't tell the IRS they'd given $25,000 to a prohibited political group. Instead, they created a fake donation which said they'd give $25,000 to a charity in Kansas that had a name similar to Pam Bondi's group. In fact, they gave no money to that group in Kansas. The money had gone to this political group in Florida. Trump's people have said, we had really terrible internal controls. This is all just a number of clerical errors compounding each other. But the effect was basically to do this thing they shouldn't have done and then to hide it from the IRS.
Here's a press conference from Tuesday where the Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi said she does not regret taking that $25,000 check from Donald Trump because her office never investigated him.
There was not an investigation into Donald Trump. The time we tried to send the check back was when we learned that it was sent through a foundation, a nonprofit. So we attempted to mail the check back, and then the IRS, I guess, corrected it with them a different way. But no, because there was never an investigation into Donald Trump by this office.
So never an investigation before or after any check was sent?
Well, what we know from looking at Freedom of Information Act requests out of Florida is that people in Florida, residents who'd gone to Trump University and found it to be a scam, had complained both to the AG's office under Bondi's predecessor and also to the Attorney General's office while Bondi was AG. And so their decision was whether they should take those allegations and turn them into an investigation. But I think she's hoping people will believe there that she just never knew about Trump University or never had cause to think it might be a matter for her office. But certainly people from Florida had already complained. And at the same time, the Attorney General in New York, Eric Schneiderman, had already launched an investigation in his state into allegations of fraud against Trump University. So the idea that Trump University was not on her radar screen, I think that's what she's trying to imply there. And it clearly was. It clearly was at least on her office's radar screen.
The phones have lit up here. Let's get first Andy from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Andy. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane and David. Thank you for your work. And my call is about your work, which is I am deeply discouraged that your work doesn't matter. And here's why. Because I believe you. I think you're a real journalist. David, I think you did your homework. My concern is that the purpose of this show is to tell the truth. You've done investigative journalism. You've gotten facts. You've backed up the research. And people still don't care. Trump has told so many lies so often that people who support him will just say, you guys are on a witch hunt. So essentially, he is Teflon Don. He can do whatever he wants, say whatever he wants. Whether Jane, you and David are right, it doesn't matter. And that just deeply saddens me as a father, as an American, as a former Republican, that we have someone that lies so much that people just say, well, you know, it must be the press. Because he doesn't admit to doing anything wrong. He will take no responsibility for anything.
Andy, thanks so much for the call. Let's get another perspective here from Brian in Ludington, Michigan. Hi, Brian. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Hi. Good to be with you. This guy just described Hillary to a T. It absolutely blows my mind to sit out here and listen to you scrutinize Donald Trump when Hillary Clinton has done the things that she's done. She admittedly left the White House with Bill broke and in debt. They are now worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And to tell me that they're not using that money for personal gain is unbelievable. You guys need to be fair about this and tell the truth about the lying Hillary Clinton.
Brian, thank you. I do want to mention again that we did an hour on the Clinton Foundation last month, and you can listen to that program on our website or get it as a podcast. David Farenthold, your response.
Well, I don't want anyone to think that what I'm saying or what I'm doing about Donald Trump means that we shouldn't look at the Clinton Foundation. The Clinton Foundation is a really important part of Hillary Clinton's life. It's an important look at how she handled the responsibility of power and what she used her power to do relative to the Clinton Foundation. It's not what I've been working on, but a lot of people at the Post and I know a lot of other places have been looking at it. The interesting thing with the distinction, I think, there's two distinctions here with the Clinton Foundation and the Trump Foundation. One, the Clinton Foundation is a really large charity. It employs a lot of people. over 2,000 people. It has a $250 million budget. It's not something that with the Clintons are sort of expected to fund themselves. They do put money into it, but it's called a public charity. It's a different kind of category than the Trump Foundation. So it's expected to get donations from the public. And so with her, the question is not whether the Clinton Foundation does good in the world. It's about sort of the moral responsibility of power. Did she use her power in a way that she should not have to help people who donated to that foundation? With Trump, it's a much smaller foundation that doesn't really do any of its direct charitable work. And so there's not something you can point to and say, well, look, the Trump Foundation is doing X in Haiti or something. It just passes money along. So the only thing we can judge it by is who it gives its money to. For him, it's really a question about the moral responsibility of wealth. Trump has a lot of money. He's always had a lot of money. For years he has. And he clearly wants to be seen as somebody who gives back and who's generous as a response to that wealth. But what we've seen is that he actually goes to great lengths to make other people pay for that philanthropy and to avoid sort of the sacrifice that traditionally comes with being a wealthy person who's trying to give back.
David, let me tick through a few of the other findings from your investigation. What about the claim of a $20 million donation to St. Jude's Hospital?
That's a really interesting case. In last year, Trump was speaking in Nevada, and he was being introduced by a sort of a local casino magnate who was a very close friend of Trump's. And that guy introduced him saying, you crowd in here in Vegas, you don't know this because the media doesn't talk about it, but Donald Trump gave $20 million to St. Jude's Hospital in Memphis. Isn't that amazing? And everyone cheers and Donald says, thank you, thank you. Well, there's no evidence that Donald Trump gave that gift at all. Instead, Eric Trump, his son, who has a totally separate charity, Eric Trump promised $20 million to St. Jude's to kind of buy the naming rights to a surgical ICU center there. Eric Trump has given some money to St. Jude's. He hasn't given $20 million. He hasn't delivered on that promise, but at least he's done something. Donald Trump, as far as – we've asked for any evidence that he's given millions, much less $20 million to St. Jude's, and I've seen none of that evidence. So it seemed like Trump was standing there taking credit for something his son and a totally separate enterprise had actually done.
What about the 6-foot-tall portrait of Donald Trump purchased with $20,000 from Trump Foundation money?
This is another case of what they call self-dealing, where you can't use – if you're the charity's manager, you can't dip into the charity's funds to buy things for yourself. And so this is – it seems like a classic case of this. In 2007, Trump is at a gala at his Mar-a-Lago club in Florida, and the entertainment is a guy called Michael Israel, who's a speed painter. In 5 minutes, he paints a painting of some celebrity. And so he does it of Trump in this case. He paints a picture of Trump, and everyone claps, and then they auction it off. And so the only real bidder is Melania Trump, Trump's wife. She bids $10,000. And then the auctioneer says, well, you're the only one bidding. You're Melania Trump. Why don't you double it? So she doubles it to $20,000. She gets the painting. Now, that would be fine. It's fine to buy a picture of your own face or your husband's face, but you have to pay for it. You have to use your own money. But instead, a few weeks later, the check comes from the Trump Foundation. So now the charity has bought the portrait. And once the charity has bought it, you can't just hang it up on your wall. You can't just hang it up in your club. You have to use it for a charitable purpose. And so the key is, where did that 6-foot-tall, $20,000 portrait go? And the only thing we know is that the artist's assistant, the guy who packed it up and shipped it on Melania Trump's orders, was told it was going to hang in the employee boardroom at Trump's golf club in Westchester County, New York. If that's where it is, that's not what you're – that's against the law. You're not allowed to do that with something you bought with charity money.
Okay, so it's a painting. A Trump supporter would say it's a painting. Okay, so they got it wrong. They made a mistake. They hung it in their house. So what?
Well, there's another painting. We just discovered this yesterday. Trump did it again in 2014. He bought a $10,000 portrait of himself and paid with money from his charity, and was discovered hanging last night in the Champions Bar and Grill at Trump's golf club in at Doral outside Miami. And so it wasn't just once. And the point is, most charities spend a lot of time scrutinizing very small purchases to make sure they're not violating the IRS rules against self-dealing. They're not using these things to benefit themselves. What we've seen instead from Trump is either an ignorance of or a willful disregard of the rules that say you can't use his charity's money to buy things for himself or his businesses. He's done it on big ticket items like these legal settlements and on small things like these portraits.
David Farenthold, hold for just a moment. Let me bring in from Washington now Ginger Gibson. She's a campaign reporter for Reuters following the Trump campaign. Ginger, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
So you've been listening to David Farenthold's reporting here, a deep reporting over the last several months. You've covered Trump on the trail. How are the details of this Trump Foundation? How is it all playing out there?
So far, we've seen little movement from his supporters, and that's not really surprising. Trump's supporters haven't been deterred by anything that we've seen reported or that he said. He's got a very strident backing from his base. The question, I think, really moving forward is whether or not this is going to move any voters who are undecided, and if it's going to be discussed at the debates. That's really going to be the moment where voters who haven't made their minds up, who are looking to the debates to decide whether they're going to vote for either one of these candidates or maybe just stay home, could see this broached and put that into their decision-making process.
Kellyanne Conway, Trump's campaign manager, says David's reporting is badgering. I'm curious how the campaign is spinning it on the trail. How have they spun it in the past?
You know, we saw the Trump campaign today describe David's reporting as inaccurate. We saw Mike Pence say that. And frankly, they haven't provided one example to the rest of us where they think it's inaccurate or there is something wrong in the stories. That's problematic. You can say something's not true until you're blue in the face, but until you can point to something that's actually not true, it's hard to take that claim very seriously. I think that David's reporting has garnered a great deal of respect from my colleagues in the press, and a lot of people are looking at those details that have been brought forward. How the Trump campaign is handling it, there's clearly not a preparation other than to just sort of push back broadly, and I think that that is really undermining at this point anything that they've managed to say that in response.
Let's go to Steve in Miamisburg, Ohio. Steve, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I just had a question. I was wondering if it was any bit unusual to have a candidate go ahead and start to raise funds in the political realm and then use those own funds that they were raising as a politician to go ahead and hold events for themselves as a candidate and then gaining funds for their own personal pockets because they're using their own venues from the political realm.
Got it. Steve, thank you very much. David Fahrenthold, I guess that would relate in Trump's case to what he does at Mar-a-Lago down in Florida?
And the Trump Hotel in D.C., Trump's golf courses around the country. He's held a lot of events at his own venues and has paid himself to hold those things. I mean, we've never really had a candidate who owned a chain of hotels before. So there's not an exact parallel, but it's clear, and I think Ginger would know about this as well, it's clear that Trump has managed to use his campaign to pay himself some money by using his own venues.
Earlier this month, during an interview on Fox News with Bill O'Reilly, Donald Trump answered questions about why he has not released his tax returns.
Nobody cares about it except some of the folks in the media. Nobody cares about it. But just so you understand, I'm under audit, a routine audit. And when the audit's complete, I'll release my returns. I don't know when that's going to be, but when the audit is complete, I'll release my returns. I have no problem with it. It doesn't matter.
And while Donald Trump said he will not release his tax return because of this ongoing audit, during an interview with the Pittsburgh Tribune Review last week, Trump's son offered a different reason for it.
He's got a 12,000-page tax return that would create probably 300 million independent financial auditors out of every person in the country asking questions that are going to distract from his main message.
So what's the answer here, Ginger Gibson? I mean, so many people have called for Trump's tax returns to be released, or what about just an audit letter?
I think Trump is probably incorrect when he says that no one cares about his taxes. It's not that there's someone in Ohio going, well, I'm going to decide who I vote on based on Donald Trump's taxes. But it does build a narrative that he's hiding something. And that's really the question to look at here. And I think we heard that from his son when he said it would be distracting to his message. They've made the calculation that taking the hit from not releasing those taxes is better than whatever fallout would come from releasing those taxes. It's such a standard part of campaigning. We remember more than a year ago when Donald Trump launched his campaign, everyone kept saying this isn't serious. He'll never release his financial disclosure forms. He did. And if anyone has ever read them, those are a very thin reporting. There's not a lot of information in there. But ultimately, a year later, all those folks who thought he wouldn't release those forms are seeing some of their predictions come true when we're not getting his tax releases.
About 20 seconds, David, before the break. What surprised you most about how people have reacted to your reporting?
I've been amazed at how many people have wanted to help, have been like combing through wedding videos from Trump's clubs trying to find copies or a picture of this 6-foot portrait I'm looking for.
I should remind our listeners we did an hour on the Clinton Foundation last month, which you can find at our website. We're discussing the Trump Foundation. Join the conversation. Is Trump suggesting he's more generous than he actually is? Is this all just a big misunderstanding? I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about Donald Trump's charitable giving and the Trump Foundation, and you can join the conversation. What do you make of Trump's response to the Washington Post investigation that he used money to pay legal fees from his foundation? What about Hillary Clinton's response? You can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's President Obama campaigning for Hillary Clinton last week in Philadelphia. On the stump, he compared the work of the Trump and the Clinton foundations.
You want to debate foundations and charities? One candidate's family foundation has saved countless lives around the world. The other candidate's foundation took money other people gave to his charity and then bought a 6-foot-tall painting of himself.
Washington Post reporter David Farenthold, you hear President Obama there. John from Facebook asks, I'd like to see a comparison to the Clinton Foundation in terms of how much did they take in, how much did they send out, who did they send it to, what favors are granted to contributors. Can you make a comparison?
We have. We've done that a little bit. What's complicated here? I'll try to make this as short as possible. There's two Clinton foundations. The Clintons have something called the Clinton Family Foundation, which is parallel to the Trump Foundation, just basically a bank account where the Clinton family gives their money away to charity. And that foundation, the Clinton Family Foundation, is only the Clintons' money. They put millions of dollars into it, and about a quarter of its money goes to the larger Clinton Foundation, the bigger one that employs all those people. So the institution they have that's like the Trump Foundation is all their money. It's not anybody else's money, and it goes to other charities but also to the Clinton Foundation that does so much work around the world. Mm-hmm. Trump's is not only unique in this race but unique in the world of – or almost unique in the world of philanthropy, very unusual in the world of philanthropy in that it doesn't actually contain any of his own money. It contains other people's money, and it seems to pay his businesses legal settlements at times. Mm-hmm.
A lot of listener comments on our website. Here's one. We are a nation that glorifies sociopathy of unfettered capitalism. We have institutionalized lying. The truth is for suckers and investigative journalists. Another, Jim says, it sounds as if the foundation's accounts attended le cordon bleu of cooking the books. Let's go to Jamie in Columbia, South Carolina. Jamie, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hello, Jane.
Hi. Go ahead.
My comment was a caller earlier indicated that he was saddened to think that because his opinion was that this investigative journalism that David is doing doesn't make a difference. But I think it does make a difference. I've been listening this morning. I think I decided before this that I was not voting for Donald Trump, although I'm generally a more conservative voter. But hearing all of this, although I don't trust Hillary Clinton and believe she tells the truth, just further supports my decision not to vote for Donald Trump because of a myriad of things, including now the fact that he is not a philanthropist based on the fact that it's not his money but other people's money. And this investigative journalism has helped me reach that decision.
Well, Jamie, thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Denise in Cleveland, Ohio. What do you have to say, Denise? Welcome.
Almost exactly the same thing I just heard from her.
So okay.
What I was going to say was that, you know, this is just too much already. And I think this really changed my mind today listening to this. So I definitely won't be voting for Trump.
All right, Denise, thank you very much. David Farenthold, let me ask you about the process of your reporting, which is just as interesting, perhaps, as what you found. You sort of married old school reporting, pen and pad, to keep track of these donations from the Trump Foundation with the new world of social media. Tell us a minute about that. How did those two play together?
Sure. Well, so when Trump's people told us that he had given millions of dollars away, but it was private, they weren't going to tell us where it had gone, I didn't want to just take Trump's word for it. So much of Trump things he says is, you know, just take my word for it. There's no way to know. Only I know. And we said, well, okay, if he's given millions and millions of dollars away, somebody has to know about it, where some of it went. And so I'm going to go looking at the charities that I think are most likely to have gotten a donation out of Donald Trump's own pocket, which he says there are millions of. I'll look at charities he gave Trump Foundation money to. I'll look at charities that he praised on Twitter, charities he went to their galas, that sort of charities whose contestants appeared on The Celebrity Apprentice. And so I started making a list on pen and paper of all these charities that I, starting with the ones I thought were closest to Trump. And then the answer, did they ever get a donation from Donald Trump's own pocket? And if so, when was the last time? And so then I started taking pictures of that and putting it on Twitter, both because I wanted Trump to know I was looking in the hopes that maybe he would just tell me the answer where he'd given his money, and also because I want readers to offer their own suggestions. And I've had a ton of suggestions from people who say, you know, I went to a gala, I saw Trump do this or that. I saw Trump buy a picture of his own face at a gala. People who write in with – or people who said, oh, try this donor database. That's how I found that there's another guy named Donald Trump who actually gives a lot of money to his charity or to charities. That's the – there's been so much that I've gotten out of the reader interaction that I've gotten from posting those notes on Twitter.
Let's go to Scott in Whitewater, Wisconsin. Scott, you're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. Have you done any research on how much and what percentage of Trump's own money is actually in these hotels? Is he 100% invested in them, or is he just making an appearance for investors, or what is his percent of ownership?
Scott, thank you. And not just in the Washington Hotel, but some of the commercial properties, right? Trump Tower in New York. David, what do you know about that?
Well, it varies. In a lot of cases, and my colleagues have written about this at the Post, the Trump's what looks like Trump Tower is actually not in other cities, not in New York. In other places, that a hotel has Trump on it is just a licensing fee. He actually doesn't own any of it. He just gets some money for licensing his name. That's particularly true overseas. In other places, Trump, like at Mar-a-Lago, Trump owns 100% of that. It really varies throughout. We wrote a story in August that examined this sort of painful deposition Trump had to give a few years ago, in which lawyers raked him over the coals for exaggerating how much he actually owned of these businesses. He'd say he owned half when he really owned 30%, or that he owned a lot when he really owned none. He's been opaque about it in the past as well.
Let's go to John in Richmond, Vermont. Hi, John. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
This whole process it allows us to evaluate the candidates over a fairly long period of time and develop an opinion about their character. It seems interesting that Trump has no problem rushing to judgment on other individuals. He's called people liars and whatever. And yet when someone approaches him with some evidence and asks for clarification, he's unwilling to provide evidence that he demands investigations of other people left and right. This double standard is very worrying. And I think, you know, regardless of your opinion on the individuals running for the position, you have to question, how does he think? What is he thinking? What he could clear things up by just producing his tax returns.
John, thank you. David Farenthold, did you come to any conclusion about Trump's thought processes during this?
One thing that's clear to me is that it matters to Trump to be seen as philanthropic, at least by people he sort of meets personally and by the businesses that – the charities that do business at Mar-a-Lago. That's what the Trump Foundation is for. When he wants to make sort of a flourish of generosity and seem generous in public, that's the pool of money that he uses. Turns out not to be his money. So it seems to matter to him in that way, but he doesn't have the same kind of – philanthropic cause like that most wealthy people have, sort of one thing that he puts money into year after year after year. You asked about him not having many things named after him. That's kind of a byproduct of that, that he doesn't put enough into any one place to have a Donald Trump building or a Donald Trump wing of a building. He sort of just goes just enough to kind of have that veneer of philanthropy.
About 30 seconds here, David. One missing charitable donation from Trump's foundation actually is accounted for. You found it. So a little bit of credit here. A check to a charity benefiting AIDS patients?
Hold on. Remind me more about that one. There's been so many.
It was an AIDS. Let's see. It's an AIDS Research Foundation. The check was missing, but it was found. I guess you found it, or someone from your crew did.
Yes. Yes. So there were a few cases where Trump's people had said they gave money, and we couldn't find evidence of it. It turned out that they had listed the wrong charity in the wrong state.
All right. We'll end on that note. David Farenthold, political reporter for The Washington Post. He's been investigating the Trump Foundation, the candidates' charitable giving. David, thanks for your great work, and we appreciate your time today.
Hey, thank you.
Ginger Gibson is a campaign reporter for Reuters. She's been closely following the Trump campaign, and we appreciate your time today, Ginger. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
We should remind our listeners once again, we did an hour on the Clinton Foundation last month. You can find that at our website. In a moment, the Bridgegate trial in New Jersey and new claims about what New Jersey Governor Chris Christie knew. This is On Point. Well, the Bridgegate trial is underway this week, and in opening statements, prosecutors cut straight to the chase, claiming New Jersey Governor Chris Christie knew all about the plot to shut down traffic lanes of the George Washington Bridge in September 2013 in order to punish a local mayor for withholding political support. Matt Katz is a political reporter for WNYC. He's spent years following New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and reporting on Bridgegate. He's been in court this week following the trial, and today he joins us from Philadelphia. Matt Katz, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Thanks so much, Jane.
So give us a little refresher on the Bridgegate scandal. Who's on trial here? Who are the major players?
Sure. This goes back to 2013 when two former appointees to Governor Christie in New Jersey are alleged to have closed lanes to the George Washington Bridge, the busiest bridge in the world, for four mornings in a row in order to punish a mayor in a little town called Fort Lee that's at the foot of the bridge. Because what the lane closures did was cause this tremendous epic traffic jam for four mornings in a row in the town of Fort Lee. And apparently and allegedly these two aides conspired with a third person, also a Christie appointee, who has pleaded guilty in the scheme and is testifying for the prosecution. So those two aides are on trial. They face nine felony counts and could see years in prison for this the most epic traffic jam that New Jersey has ever seen.
And so when prosecutors said on the first day that Chris Christie knew about Bridgegate, was that a surprise?
It was. We knew that that Christie met with the conspirators, the alleged conspirators, during the lane closures. It happened in September, and there was a 9/11 anniversary ceremony on September 11th, 2013, at Ground Zero, which is controlled by the same agency, the Port Authority, that controls the George Washington Bridge. And Christie has partial control with the New York governor over that agency. So Christie goes to this 9/11 ceremony, and he is hanging out with these guys. And we know that because we have pictures of them laughing before the ceremony begins. What prosecutors alleged that what this conversation, what this laughter was really about was these conspirators told Christie, they were, quote, bragging to Christie about how they had caused this traffic jam in Fort Lee. And even more shockingly, they said that they were also, the prosecutors said these men were also bragging to Christie that they were ignoring the concerns from the mayor of Fort Lee about public safety. I mean, public safety was a major a concern at the time. There were ambulance drivers who were totally stuck in gridlock. Mm-hmm. They had to get out of their vehicles and run to the scene of incidents. These guys were allegedly bragging to Christie that they had done this and were ignoring the mayor's concerns.
So Governor Chris Christie, of course, at the center of this. But is the allegation also that New York Mayor Andrew Cuomo somehow colluded to cover up Bridgegate?
There's an allegation that Christie and Cuomo had a conversation a couple months later before this all blew up. This all came out 3 months after the traffic jam when one of Christie's aides, an email from one of Christie's aides was revealed that said time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee. Very explicit. Before that email came out, there was a lot of efforts at keeping this under wraps within the Christie administration. But prosecutors also alleged that there was also a conversation with with Andrew Cuomo, who also controlled this agency, with Christie, and it was a very tense conversation. And they were talking to each other. And I should clarify, this was defense attorneys who made the allegation about Cuomo. Cuomo has consistently said he knew nothing about it. And by the way, Christie has said the same thing.
So here is Chris Christie speaking on Sunday to CNN's Jake Tapper on State of the Union, saying that he does not expect to be called as a witness during the trial.
I've been investigated by three different entities, two of them led by partisan Democrats, who, you know, have all found that I had no knowledge of this incident and no involvement in it. And so I would have no problem if called to testify by either side. But the fact is that I won't, because I really don't have any knowledge of this incident at all.
So Matt Katz, political reporter for WNYC, in terms of strategy, why is the prosecution and the defense making the point that this was Christie's scheme? Why would both sides want to implicate the governor here?
Yeah, it's rough in the courtroom for the governor, and he has no friends in that room. The prosecution is making the argument that there was a tradition almost of retaliation against politicians who went against Chris Christie. So this Mayor Fort Lee didn't endorse Christie for his reelection, so he was punished. They are bringing up other examples of that and saying that the defendants partook in such retribution against local mayors and other politicians. The defense, meanwhile, it wants to argue that there's no way these lowly employees of the state of New Jersey and the Port Authority could have carried out such a scheme without the governor and people higher up being some way involved. And they're saying that Christie was very close with this guy, David Wildstein. He's the one who has pleaded guilty and is cooperating with the feds, that they were very close, and together they kind of colluded on all sorts of dark arts. So they're putting the blame on that guy and Christie, and the prosecution is saying it was an administration-wide issue, this retaliatory tactics.
So, of course, Chris Christie has been a surrogate of Donald Trump. Here's Donald Trump taking a swing at Christie over Bridgegate. This is at a rally in Charleston in December.
I would say there's less than 1% chance. It could be, but I doubt it. He knew about it. They mentioned. They didn't mention at one of their meetings. I think they had breakfast like every day or every other day. They didn't say, Chris, tonight we're closing up the George Washington Bridge because the mayor of a certain area is against you. Oh, okay. They didn't mention. Nobody believes that.
So this is a six-week shakedown likely of Chris Christie. Matt Katz, got about 10 seconds here. How long is this trial expected to take?
It's going to go 6 weeks, and we'll see if Christie's reputation survives. It's already taken a beating, and we're just in day three.
Matt Katz, political reporter for WNYC, covering the Bridgegate trial. He's speaking to us today via Skype. He's author of American Governor Chris Christie's Bridge to Redemption. Thanks for being with us, Matt.
Thank you, Jane.
You can continue the conversation. Listeners, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, the long-awaited Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.